Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 2nd, 2014. South Sudan releases 2014-2015 fiscal year budget, which lawmakers say will be thoroughly scrutinized.
It has not been respected, even the allocation of budget to the ministries. They don't get the amount budgeted for their ministries. And the weakness may be because of no accountability.
And Jonglei state officials try to get youth more involved in farming, which they say will cut down on poverty and crime.
We are introducing agriculture mechanization that is promoting the innovative agriculture technology in the state.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan released its fiscal year 2014-2015 budget today to the parliament, which stands at 13.3 billion South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of $3.5 billion US dollars. As Simon Wakiwudu reports for VOA from Juba, 60% of the proposed budget will be spent on security and government salaries.
This year's budget is the second largest since the establishment of the semi-autonomous Southern Sudan government, as it was called in 2005. South Sudan's Minister of Finance, Agritisa Sabuni, who presented the budget to Parliament, defended its large increase in spending on security.
We will use our limited resources to maintain security, keep government running, and provide core services. However, we will also make efforts to pay down our debts and pay off some of our arrears so that our finances remain on a sustainable footing. We will also support a few carefully selected investments to underpin our peace and reconstruction efforts.
Under the newly proposed budget, the security sector would be allocated 4 billion South Sudanese pounds. Other key sectors such as education would receive 6.2 million South Sudanese pounds and health about 4 million pounds. Infrastructure, social and humanitarian programs and projects would receive significant increases compared to the current fiscal budget. Tisa says the bottom line is South Sudan must improve its collection of non-oil revenues. In the past, about 90% of the country's funding, or about 9 billion South Sudanese pounds, came from oil revenue. The government expects to accrue about 3 billion South Sudanese pounds from non-oil revenue in the next fiscal year. Tisa says a significant portion of the budget will be devoted to paying down on South Sudan's debt.
260 million pounds will be set aside to cater for interest payments on our outstanding debts. 800 million pounds will be allocated to the arrears fund we mentioned earlier. 250 million pounds will be allocated to the emergency contingency fund. 9,532,000,000 pounds will be allocated to government agencies from government's own resources, while 436 million pounds will be allocated to government agencies for projects financed by our development partners.
Tisa called on members of parliament to enact laws that will crack down on government corruption.
We need to streamline our revenue administration to maximize our collections, minimize leakages, and reduce the cost of doing business. My ministry will therefore need to work closely with the Minister of Justice in order to ensure that spending agencies do not enter into new contracts for which they have no budgetary allocations.
Tisa tabled a financial bill aimed at reducing some of that corruption by ensuring proper discipline among government agencies on how they manage their budget allocations. Among other things, the bill would have tightly regulated taxation and various licensing fees charged by government agencies. The proposed budget is expected to be approved in a few weeks' time. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudanese lawmakers have huge tasks in front of them in reviewing the new budget, which is significantly smaller than the current one. Both government and opposition members of parliament say the budget must be thoroughly scrutinized before receiving final approval. Philip Aleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Andrew Okony, the leader of the minority in parliament, says the allocation of resources fell well below expectations in the 2014-2015 budget. He says the Minister of Finance needs to provide some specifics on how the country resources will be used. For instance, Okony says monies allocated for road infrastructure and specific road projects must be included in the budget proposal.
We wanted to know the areas, how long, how many kilometers, because these are quantified, and where, and from where, and the date of the starting. It needs some clarification so that it convinces the ordinary citizens.
Okony says the opposition members of parliament have little influence in approving the budget because the ruling party controls the overwhelming majority of votes. He says other lawmakers who represent other parties are building alliance with the SPLM to create change and reduce corruption.
It has not been respected, even the allocation of budget to the ministries. They don't get the amount budgeted for their ministries. And the weakness may be because of no accountability. Nobody has been accounted for since 2005. We had the papers, the documents, and everybody does what he, she likes.
SPLM lawmaker Garwich Lampoy says, generally speaking, he supports the budget proposal, but needs more time to study each line item.
According to what we hear from the Minister of Finance, I cannot give a conclusion now whether the budget is good or not good, because I have to go to the detail of the budget and see the allocation properly to the areas of interest. The budget did not even identify what are the priorities that need to be addressed at this time.
Abraham Wani Fita, a Juba resident who attended the budget speech, says it appears the new budget proposal is independent of oil revenue.
All over the world, taxpayers are the ones developing their country. So this budget centered that all the 23 or 22 ministries must be revisited and must be empowered so that the non-oil revenue figure must increase, so that from there at least can facilitate the schools and hospital and water.
Wani says although only 13% of the budget goes to capital spending, he is confident that government priorities will shift to road construction and more allocation of basic services to South Sudanese citizens. That is, once the government and rebel finally agree on a comprehensive fees deal. For BOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
Traders in Warap's state capital, Kwajok, say hundreds of street children loitering the town's streets are becoming nuisance. They accuse them of stealing and want the state government to establish a home for street kids. State authorities say they are aware of the problem but have no money to build children's center. For VOA News, Santino Monut reports from Kwajok.
15-year-old Garang Ring Deng says he has spent many years living on the streets of Kwajok and other towns after his parent died.
I used to polish shoes and then I began to collect empty plastic containers of soda and then I later on moved into the market. I do not rob or steal from anyone. I only collect empty containers and charcoal and sell them and eat from that money.
Ring says he would like the government to provide him with an education, food and good accommodations. Alokshin Koitoin, director of child welfare in the state's social development ministry, says an assessment conducted in Gugrial West, Twige and Toin South counties in 2012 found 360 children living on the streets. Soin says children between the ages of 5 and 17 are living on the streets. The majority of them seem to be around 10 years old. He says 90% of street children have parents but prefer to live on the streets because their parents do not have enough food to go around.
11 of these children were found without parents, without any relatives related to them here. But the rest have relatives, either single parents or something like that. Now we throw this into the child protection working group and they have seen the complications.
Kazito Musa, a Ugandan trader in Kwajong Market, thinks state and federal have should establish reformatory centers for street kids. Musa says traders are willing to support any government initiative aimed at getting children off the streets.
The state government, or even the government of Southern Sudan, can build any home collection of all of those street boys. They take them there. Even if they come and they, that they are collecting money, or even £5 or £10, that each hotel or each building to provide food for those boys. I think the people can pay that money because they are disturbing them a lot. Even they are tired of them.
Yahya Yusuf Abdullah, a Sudanese businessman operating in Kwajong Main Market, says street children harass him every day.
The street children are affecting our work. When they see you things displayed in the shops, they come and just pick up your goods and run away. And if you chase after them, they start throwing stones at you and they fight back unless you call the police on them.
Thorne says the state government does not have plans to build a home for the children and appeal to NGOs to step in.
We are welcoming all other partners and all other local NGOs who may also wish to work in that regard. We will just help them in that way and they will also work and mobilize for fun.
Thorne says there are more street children in Warabu State than in any of the neighboring western Bahr Al Ghazal State, northern Bahr Al Ghazal, and Lagos States. For BOA News, I am Santino Manudayuel in Kwajong, Warabu State.
Officials in Jonglei State are encouraging young people to go into farming. They say it's a way to reduce hunger, poverty, and even crime in the community. Jacob Achiek has the story for VOA from the state capital, Bor.
Jonglei State Agriculture and Forestry Ministry is working to get young people, and especially young men, involved in farming. The state's agriculture minister, Mayanengor Atim, said the aim is to introduce residents to modern farming methods so that they can produce more food and help to improve natural security in the state. The program would also give the state youth something constructive to do with their time, he said.
We are introducing agriculture mechanization, that is promoting the innovative agriculture technology in the state. The second thing is that we are also engaging the youth so that they produce enough food. We are also solving mitigating conflict so that the youth go and look for food.
Agona Lirlik is a commissioner of Bor County, where the agriculture project is based. He said the project will solve the problem of food shortages in the county, which, along with much of the rest of Jonglei State, was hard hit by the fighting that broke out in mid-December.
We are trying to encourage different sectors, from youth to women and other sectors, actually, to be involved in agriculture, so that we are able to provide solutions to these problems of food shortages. Food security in the area. So I believe that this is a very useful project that will have to be encouraged and to be adopted by youth in other areas.
Deng Magot is a youth representative from Bor County. He said developing the agriculture sector will create job for unemployed youth. That means farming could help to reduce crime in the county, such as cattle rustlings.
It creates more job opportunities because those youth who are redundant, they will be engaged, and also it can minimize the crime in the state because people will be engaged and they will have no time for redundancy. Yes, my last message to youth, we have to use the energies such that we can create our own food so that we will be free from hunger in South Sudan, because being a youth, you have to do your own work instead of depending on government, because government is to focusing on social amenities, not only individual needs, so we have to work for our own.
Simon Fiok Awai, a government officer from the Ministry of Cabinet Affairs, said setting up agricultural productions will help to speed up development in the health, education and infrastructure sector too.
This is a very good initiative because the way I see this plan is very good for the community, because when they actually produce these produces and they sell them to other part of the country, they can use this money to build their schools. Or they can even use the money to maybe develop their roads and other important projects that will bring development to the community. So for me, it's a very good initiative that can be encouraged to be done in the country as at large, because in this way we can achieve much development as quickly as possible.
But Thorns, a resident of Bow Town, is skeptical that now it is time to launch the projects. He worried that the situation in South Sudan, which is in the seventh month of conflict, would be able to support a push to developing farming.
It is somehow productive in a certain situation, but the current situation we see it doesn't work because our aim or the first objective is the security. And the second objective, maybe as we see now, maybe the food security. And if that thing might be the issue, then I don't think that doesn't it work. It is contradicting.
Unemployment in South Sudan is extremely high. The World Bank and anti-poverty NGO Oxfam said only around 12% of the working population in the country has a job. Last year, the United Kingdom and United Nations Development Programme donated 30 tractors to Jonglei State authorities for use in youth farming projects. Two of the tractors were given to Bor County and the rest went to other counties. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor, Jonglei State.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Stray dogs that are lost or separated from their owners can look helpless, but they can also be dangerous and carry bad diseases. One such disease, rabies, is a serious threat in Africa, where it kills more people than in any other part of the world. The greatest risk is to children, young boys in particular, who approach the animals to play and then get bitten. To protect your family, eliminate anything that attracts stray animals to your area. Store food so it has no scent to attract dogs. Bury or burn trash. And don't keep water in open bowls or containers. All these things can protect you and your children from the threat of disease caused by bites from stray dogs.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, President Kiir's spokesman assured journalists that there is freedom of speech in South Sudan. That story is coming up.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Put your flags up in
the sky, in the sky. Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit VOAfootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at VOAfootball.com.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should people be free to choose their own religious beliefs? Why?
Yeah, people should be free to choose their religious beliefs because everyone has a freedom and the right to choose where he or she wants to belong.
Yeah, they should, because every church, maybe they have their own teachings like catechism or so. So depending on what you're taught, you'll have to choose what to believe.
It's true that you cannot tell somebody that you should shift from this religion to another one. That's impossible. That's not human rights. If you follow in the principles and guidelines of the human rights, then everybody has to make up his mind to go to the religion he or she wants.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In our continued series on federalism, a presidential spokesman Ateny Wek Ateny says President Kiir has no plans to silence the ongoing debate about a federal system of governments for South Sudan. He says the debate has created no rift in President Kiir's government or put critics in danger. Philip Aleu compiled this report from Juba, which is voiced by VOA fellow Nabil Biagio.
There has been speculation this week that allies of President Kiir are at loggerheads with him over his style of leadership. But Ateng says that is not the case.
The President of the Republic is not against federalism so that you can have any dispute with his friends, because Kelemen Wanikongo is one of the best friends of the President. The two governors of Western Equatoria and Eastern Equatoria also have very good relationship with the President. They are in contact all the time with the President. So there is no any way that the President could conspire or ought to have conspired to eliminate them, simply because they are talking of federalism.
Ateng says since fighting started in mid-December in Juba, people have been living in constant fear. He says social media are spreading false information to the people of South Sudan that is stoking citizens' fears.
This rumor of spies being sent out, people are going to be assassinated, and you name it, are just the creation of the social media. There's no plan of that kind. There's no anybody who has been arrested. And believe me, the issue of arrest and issue of detention and all this are not available here in South Sudan.
Ateng says that before he was named Mr. Kiir's spokesman, he was one of the biggest critics of the government, and nothing ever happened to him.
I could have been one of the people that have been, you know, behind the bar, because I've written a lot before I am appointed to this office. I don't think there is anybody who has challenged any establishment more than me among you here. I have done that. I have never been arrested.
Ateng, who was a civil society activist prior to his appointment as presidential spokesman, says reporters should inform him when journalists are arrested for criticizing President Kiir or his government. Journalists say media rights are rapidly eroding in South Sudan. In 2012, political commentator Isaiah Abraham, who was a staunch critic of Mr. Kiir, was killed by gunmen suspected of being members of the South Sudanese security forces. The government launched an investigation into the murder, but no one has ever been apprehended for it. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is calling for a swift investigation into the abduction of an Arab teen and the discovery of a body in Jerusalem. Police have not yet identified the body and are investigating whether the incidents are related. Authorities received calls a Palestinian youth was forced into a car in an Arab section of Jerusalem. A cargo plane has crashed into a building in Kenya's capital, killing four people on board. The plane hit the two-story building housing small shops shortly after taking off early today from Nairobi's main airport. And finally, at least eight Afghan military officers have died and several more have been wounded in a suicide attack on an Air Force bus in Kabul. Government officials said the attack took place near Kabul University today. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
For our final report, we stay in Warrap State, where bodaboda operators are complaining about a statewide police crackdown they say is costing them big money. Police have seized some 250 motorbikes in Kwajok, and operators are accusing the police of refusing to provide the required licensing materials such as number plates to motorists. For VOA News, Santino Monut has more from Kwajok, Warrap State.
Bodaboda driver Wea Gagain says he plays one bodaboda operators to carry a license the traffic division in Warrap State should hand over the forms needed to facilitate the licensing process.
I have just heard of the police crackdown, but they don't even have what is required for the licensing, and I cannot travel to other places looking for them. They're the ones who should look for them.
Another operator in Kwajok, Atem Cho, says he does not have a license for his motorbike because he cannot afford insurance or license. The cost is around 700 South Sudanese pounds. Cho is appealing to traffic police to give him time to pay on an installment basis.
Getting enough money to be insured and to get a license is difficult here. But if the money should be paid in installments, as they say, then we can try to do that. Every month or every week we can pay whatever is required for insuring or licensing our bikes. Now I have set aside a saving box so I can save £10 or so every day until the amount required is reached.
Traffic police in Warabi State said they have seized some 250 motorbikes whose riders have no insurance or plate numbers. Traffic officer Simon Sebit says crackdown will continue until all motorists have proper legal documents.
The motorbikes we have seized are about 250. The campaign is ongoing. It will continue in order to reduce the cases of accidents, to reduce the breaking of traffic rules, and to reduce over-speeding in our town. Last month, there were 6 cases of accidents. 2 cases resulted in deaths. And in this month, there are 5 cases. That's why we are carrying out the crackdown. We don't want anybody killed or injured.
Sebida high traders and other citizens who ride non-commercial motorbikes to obtain license to insure their motorbikes and to respect the traffic rules and regulations. He says border drivers should go no faster than 20 km per hour in town. At the same time, Sebida says the speed limit for other motorists is much higher.
I am appealing to those who operate the border business. Please do not speed just because of £5 while you know that you are carrying women and children. Ride slower. The speed allowed by traffic police for border riders is 10 to 20 kilometers per hour. This is my message to border riders. And for other drivers, the speed within town is 50 kilometers per hour.
Joseph Litti, Warabi State Director of Traffic Police, warned the individuals whose motorbikes have been confiscated to collect them within 3 months' time. He said motorbikes that have not been collected at the end of that time will be declared stolen and sold.
The confiscated motorbikes will stay in traffic police custody for 3 months, and if the owners do not turn up, then we will write to a prosecutor, and if he approves, they will be auctioned.
Most border customers seem welcome the move by police to screen out motorbikes operators who refuse to follow traffic rules. Ashul Shamir says she will be affected by the crackdown, but she says those who have no license should not be allowed to operate border.
Somebody with license and above age should ride, but somebody without license, even if he is above age, should not ride. This is because motors kill.
Border is the only affordable means of transport for nearly all commuters in Warabi State. They also account for 90% of all accident cases in Kwajok. Reporting for VOA, I am Santino Munudayuel in Kwajok, Warabi State.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song "Anna Maskin" by Southern King. Mama kore walele, Baba kore walele, Ana kore walele, Ana kore walele, Mama kore walele. Kalamu tatunia, Mama. We have been listening to Southern King with that song, Anna Maskin. I'm John Tanza in Washington. It's good to have you with us. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.